Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 70. Thanks for joining me today. This is Jamie Russo. I am the owner of Enerspace Coworking and the executive director of the Global Workspace Association and the host of this podcast. So today we're going to talk about hiring and how to pay employees and how to avoid payroll tax disasters, one of which I recently experienced. So we're going to hop right in. I am hiring to replace my community manager at my Palo Alto location. She was with me for 3.5 years. Isn't that crazy for anyone listening that has a space that's open and has hired a community manager? You know that's an insanely long tenure for a community manager. It can be a pretty demanding job depending on the size of your space, and it requires sort of being on all day and being able to manage lots of interruptions and different personalities, and it can just be a lot. So typically, we think of that role being like 1 to 2 years. I think one of the other challenges about the tenure of this role is unless you have multiple locations and some sort of hierarchy in your organization, there's not really a lot of places for your team to go. So they kind of have to move on. So it tends to be a really good place for folks who are transitioning or maybe are newer to the workplace. And so they tend to kind of have their eye on what's next after this. And just to mention a couple of other episodes that I did on this topic, and one of them is from 2015, crazy. Episode number 19, hiring a community manager for your shared space, which is going to be probably a little bit similar to this one. And then I have an interview with former community manager at WorkBar, who talked about what the role looks like and, you know, what the challenges are and how she handles her day to day. And so I remember that being super good, and I can't find it off the top of my head here. Oh, here we go. Tiffany Knight, episode number 16. So 16 and 19 are also on hiring. This is kind of an updated view of the world since we're now 2.5 years after that. So here are my learnings from my experience, and I will start by saying my experience may be a little bit unique. So Palo Alto is in Silicon Valley. It's 30 miles south of San Francisco. It's where Facebook is and Google and Apple and, well, they're not all in Palo Alto, but they're very close by. And so we have a very hot job market, and it is not that easy to find folks that are interested in roles like this. So this has been a challenge, but my insights can apply to any market that you're in. So let's start off with the job description, which you want to write and make sure you're super clear on yourself before you post it. So first tip, be super clear about the role. Sell it, but don't oversell it. I include sections on all the hats that they have to wear, from business development to marketing to hospitality to customer service. I really try to be pretty detailed and granular because I want candidates that really understand what they're getting into. I don't want candidates applying that sort of aren't really clear on the role. I don't think that's a good use of their time or of my time. So I try to be really, really clear because it's not a role that people are necessarily familiar with. Although this goes to kind of the unique market. I did a search, which I'll talk about in a minute, and a community manager role is fairly common in Silicon Valley for tech companies, but it can mean very different things in different roles and different types of businesses. So I think it's err on the side of being more detailed than you think you need to be. In my case, I included the pay, which you may choose not to do, but again, given the fact that I'm in a unique market with pretty competitive pay, I didn't want to oversell the compensation for the role and wanted to be very clear about that. And again, not get on the phone and phone screen folks that would then be disappointed by what I was paying. Not that I'm paying market rate for the role, but in the area that we live in, it is not the highest paying job. I will note one quick side note with my GWA hat on, which is the Global Workspace Association, which is a trade association for the industry. The survey that we did last year, the full version, has salary benchmarking for community managers in it. So if you're a GWA member and you don't have your copy, send an email to answers@globalworkspace.org. And if you're looking for that data, a little sell work here, it's a great reason to join. It's a really comprehensive report, and it has data from over 300 co-working spaces. They are mostly in the U.S. We have some from outside of the U.S., just because I know we have a global audience listening. I wanted to mention that. One of the other things I did while I was going through this process was to survey for other sample job descriptions. So I put them in a PDF, and I'm going to link to those in the show notes at www.everythingcoworking.com/70. So you can find the link there. It's a PDF with community manager job descriptions from several different co-working spaces, including the role that I'm hiring for. So I found it interesting to compare language used. Not all of them have pay. I'm not sure that any of them had pay, but I included it. I did also mark it as part of the compensation package. We use an employment provider similar to TriNet. So my employee is on that system, and so she has access to healthcare benefits. We contribute to healthcare benefits. She has access to dental, 401k. She has paid vacation time. So certainly an attractive suite of benefits that's not available for all types of roles that would be at this level. And again, with my GWA hat, I have to put a little pitch in that if you are a GWA member, you have access to very unique pricing for TriNet benefits. You can go to globalworkspace.org/TriNet or /health to see what those benefits are for your employees or for the members of your space. But it's a huge advantage to have that taken care of. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about the advantages when I talk about the disaster that I had unrelated to an employee covered by TriNet a little bit later in the episode. So another thing I would suggest after looking at sample job descriptions, and again, you can find the PDF of that in the show notes, is consider testing different titles. Depending on your market, community manager may not be a term that people search for or would find or would recognize, you know, or would appeal to them in a listing. So maybe this is what I did. I went to Indeed.com, which is a common place to post, a common site to post, sort of with the mindset of a job searcher. And I typed in, you know, community manager, I typed in marketing roles, kind of looked at the descriptions, assessed the pay range, what are the experience requirements, et cetera, to kind of get a sense for where was I sitting versus others, and is the language in my job description and my title what folks are looking at in my market. So if you're in a smaller market, a community manager job may just not be recognizable. You might want to start with a marketing role or, you know, maybe a customer service role, but play around a little bit. Look for other role descriptions that kind of look similar that might help you attract the right candidate. So where to post is always a really hot topic. And I certainly started asking this question as I posted and didn't get any responses. I have been struggling with this process. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do an episode on it, because it's been hard. And one of the reasons I do the podcast is to help people avoid the challenges that I have. So first of all, be patient, but be consistent with your posting and your outreach. So my manager, and I'm going to kind of jump into this about how I sort of work with my managers. You know, I knew after a year that I was sort of on borrowed time. I didn't know that it would be 3.5 years, but I work with my manager to talk about her career goals and what is she interested in doing long term, and, you know, what is she interested in learning, and what does a transition at some point look like to her, and just am really open and supportive. And my deal with her was like, look, I'm going to be super supportive of you and help you with your transition, making introductions, connections on LinkedIn, sending resumes for her, whatever I could do to help, as long as she gave me plenty of notice when she was ready to go, because I knew it would take some time to find a replacement. And my dream scenario was that she could train her replacement before she left. That did not happen. She gave me plenty of notice and we did not find a replacement before she left. But she's been super supportive in helping with the transition, which mostly involves me relearning the job, which is also, you know, an unexpected opportunity, because it's always good to get out of the weeds of your business. If you listened to a couple of episodes ago, I talked about books that I recommend, and one of them is The E-Myth Revisited, and it's the idea of you need to work on your business and not in your business, but sometimes it's good to revisit the details and think about processes and how everything is done and can it be done better since you have a fresh perspective coming to the table next. Anyway, back to where to post. I started with Indeed and I started with Craigslist. I know a lot of folks may not be sure about Craigslist, but for a role like this, I figure it can't hurt. We did get a couple of submissions from Craigslist. Indeed was really challenging. We spent money and didn't get qualified candidates. We get a lot of those applications where they just hit the button and apply and they don't submit the cover letter, which was required in our posting. So that was fairly frustrating. And one tip, I did let Indeed know this a couple of times and they gave me credits to keep going with funding from them to try to get better results. But it was pretty challenging. We actually tried running local Facebook posts for the role, and I'll include screenshots of those ads in the show notes at Well, which again are at everythingcoworking.com/70. This is actually a thank you to Mara Hauser at 25 North Coworking, and her marketing team, Aaron Maresco, gave me some examples of ads that they had run when they were hiring, because I was telling Mara how nervous I was getting that I was never going to hire someone. And we had some pretty good results from it, and good exposure and good click-throughs. And the rate that we paid per click was right around, actually was less than what we paid on Indeed. So it was about $1 per click, and I was paying $1.25 a click on Indeed. So I will post the ads that we put on Facebook. And Facebook is really great because you can get super, super targeted. And actually, I realized, I won't go into it, but I basically picked the zip codes, you know, pretty close to the space for ease of commute. I realized later this may have actually been an error, because after talking to some members of mine, they suggested, why don't you recruit from the East Bay? Because there are more people over there that might be, you know, sort of the right candidates for this role, and give them some flexible hours so they can get across the bridge. So I didn't do that adjustment because I since had some luck getting some applications in, but you can set the zip code. You cannot set age, which was interesting. So for most ads, you can set an age range. So for job ads, they don't allow you to discriminate. So you cannot, which is great. It helps avoid making any mistakes that you might make just sort of out of user error. So you can't set some of the demographics and things that you would typically set for an ad, but you can set zip code, possibly interests, education level. So you can say education level so that you're not paying for high school students, for example, to click on the ad. And again, it's fairly affordable and you can set a budget so that you don't go over your budget. And then my last tip, and I was somewhat nervous about this, and part of it was just managing timing with not wanting to announce Kyla's departure too soon because she still had a few weeks left of her tenure. But finally, I sent an email to members announcing that she was leaving and with a link to the job description on our website and saying, look, you know, we're hiring and we would love any referrals that you have from your network. And surprisingly, that was really fruitful. And again, I sort of was feeling like, oh, I should have a little distance. I should be handling this, you know, sort of client, customer, you know, professional client relationship there. But I went in for a lunch, a thank you lunch for Kyla, and just had a really great experience talking to the members. One of the members was interviewing her. She herself is hiring for her team. And she said, hey, I'm interviewing someone next week. And if she seems like a better fit for you, then I'll pass her along. And a couple of the members said, hey, you know, we hire too. And we know it's really hard to find folks for roles like this in the immediate vicinity. Here's some ideas we have. And we brainstormed. So I, you know, am working at the space this week. And the problem I have is that I live not that close. It could take me an hour in rush hour. And I have to drop my daughter off at school. So I can't always get there early enough to make coffee, and we make coffee. So I actually had a really nice discussion with some of my members brainstorming about how do we get the coffee made in the morning. So we found some good solutions to that, and they were more than willing to help out, which was really nice. You realize community members are business owners too, and they understand, you know, when you're trying to balance some things and solve some challenges, and they wanted to be a part of solving the solution. So that was great. And actually, two of our applications, folks that I phone screened, came from members. So that worked out really well. So in terms of screening process, in terms of the resume, so we require a resume and a cover letter. And it seems as though cover letters have gone somewhat out of vogue based on all of the applications that we got from Indeed without cover letters attached to them. I don't know how people think they're getting jobs. But when I was a kid, no, we won't do that. But Here's the trick that I do in my job description to make sure I'm getting a candidate that can read directions. I put a specific call to action at the end of the job description to make sure that they're reading the whole thing and following instructions and being detail-oriented, because this job certainly requires that. So I put at the bottom, please submit a cover letter and please address it to my name. And I indicate that I am a female so that I don't get any dear sirs thinking, because my first name could go either way. So that's my little test. And you wouldn't believe how, like, 95% of applicants don't do it. Dear sir, dear hiring manager, dear hiring committee, because they're using form letters, but I just delete those. I don't care what their background is or how compelling their cover letter is. They're never compelling when they don't follow the directions. But it's a really easy way to screen resumes, because you could have the problem where you get, depending on your market, you could get lots and lots and lots of resumes, and it could be hard to go through them. So this is a way to kind of just easily screen out folks that are not a good fit because they're not paying directions. They're not following directions, sorry. But also in terms of the resume, one of my learnings this time, and I'm sure this happens every time I hire someone, is be open-minded. And of course, you want to be open-minded for all the right reasons of inclusion and diversity. But even in terms of just making assumptions about what background you're looking for or why someone might want this role, it is a unique role. And for instance, we had a PhD student, like a life sciences PhD. He has a PhD, he's not even a student anymore, apply. And a law school graduate apply. And I thought, well, these two are probably not fits for this role. And I decided, because they followed the directions, wrote very compelling cover letters to screen them anyway. And they turned out to have very good stories and very good reasons for being interested in the job and wanting to learn more. And so it was a reminder to me, look, you never know what someone's thinking, what kind of transition they're looking for. It can't hurt. And there are people who are really drawn to co-working for the same reasons that we are, that are applying for these jobs. So my sort of philosophy is screen anyone that follows my directions, that has a pretty compelling cover letter, even if your assumption is they're not going to be a very good fit. So my process is I take resumes, I have the specific instructions on the job description to make sure they submit a cover letter that's addressed specifically to me. And then I do a phone screen, and then I will do an in-person meeting with the folks that I have a good experience with on the phone screen. And the phone screen, leave it to 30 minutes. That way you can't have people telling you their whole life story. Have a process in place. Do not get on to just share stories and get to know someone, because you won't. It won't go well. So have a list of questions, and I'll include a link to a book that I like on interviewing that has just kind of a basic list of questions, including what are you best at? What are you not best at? How would your last five managers, or however many managers they've had, if they're younger, rate you on a scale of 1 to 10 based on your last role? There are a few really good questions that tend to pull some good nuggets out of people and help you understand kind of where they're coming from. And also on the phone screen, again, I like to be really candid about the role, expectations, career path, next steps, average tenure. You know, for example, one of the candidates that I phone screened, I could tell that he was very interested in this type of role, but would prefer it to be in a specific niche. And so I was honest with him. I said, look, I'm looking for someone that can commit to a year. I understand, you know, that this role may not lend itself for more than a year, but I need someone, if I'm going to train them and support them, I want them to be pretty sure that they'll be staying for a year. And so we had a really nice discussion about that. I would also say, because this role is somewhat unique, a lot of folks will say, well, where do you hire? You know, from what industries do you tend to hire? Like hospitality? And I think, you know, certainly depending on the size of your space and how defined each role is. So I have a smaller space in Palo Alto, and so we have just one manager. So she wears all the hats. So I don't necessarily need someone from hospitality. I need someone who's willing to wear all the hats. If you have a bigger space, and you have a director of operations and a director of community, or however it is that you divide up the roles, you may specifically want to hire for hospitality for your community-facing manager, or even the operations person, because they're, you know, they've really great experience and can help you kind of operationalize your work in a bigger space. But to me, it's important to hire for attitude, because I think I can train almost any part of this job, and what I need is someone who wants to do the job. And related to that, I look for an authentic interest in the role and also a why for their next role. Like, what are they looking for, and why do they want this role? that is really aligned. So are they looking for the network? Are the hours important to them? And I know that's not the only driver, but as an example, but I'm just looking for something that kind of gives me an indication that they're actually interested in doing the job and that sort of their life phase right now lines up with it. Because what I don't want is someone who thinks the job is interesting, but then will grab something else that comes along next that might better line up with their commute or the hours they need because they have kids or, you know, a sexier job at Facebook or Google or whatever that may be. So I like to look for that alignment. And then I do an in-person meeting where obviously, you know, show them around the space and sort of really get into what is the day-to-day life of a community manager look like and just really get a feeling for chemistry and fit between the two of us. And then when you're ready to make an offer, make sure you have an offer that's been reviewed by an attorney. Because the offer letter is important and you can say things that are legally not supported in an offer letter related to contributions to healthcare benefits and things like that. So you want to be careful and make sure you have an offer letter that comes from an attorney, and that shouldn't be difficult or expensive. And you want to include salary, vacation time, you know, expectations on hours, that kind of thing. And related to that, I think, and I mentioned this the last time I talked about this topic in previous podcasts, but I think a lot of folks are very tempted to make this a 1099 role versus a W-2 role. And if you're new to employing people, 1099s are for contractors or freelancers or people that are doing work sort of on their own free will, on their own time in a location not designated by you. And a W-2 employee needs to have forms filed by you with the government and payroll taxes and Social Security and those things taken out of their paycheck by you. It is more expensive to have a W-2 employee, and so I think people tend to avoid it. It's also just a bunch more paperwork and things to worry about and things to screw up, which I've done and will share in a little bit as well. But it is not legal to have a 1099 employee who isn't clearly classified as that. And you can Google and look up, you know, classification of employees. And basically, if you're telling someone that they need to be somewhere in a certain time frame, like at your front desk, at your co-working space from 9 to 2, even if it's part-time, they need to be a W-2 employee. So W-2s are not just for full-time employees. They are also for part-time employees. So I shouldn't say they, the classification of being a W-2 employee is also for part-time employees. And that does not mean you need to offer benefits or get into any of that, but it means that you need to file payroll paperwork with the state and with the government, and you need to be pulling taxes out of their paycheck and submitting those and giving them a W-2 statement at the end of the year versus a 1099 form. So I know operators who have been sued for misclassifying. Even you never know who is dating an attorney, whose dad's an attorney, you know, who has a bad experience at the space for some reason, or just, you never know. So don't assume that you can't get sued for misclassification and treat that very carefully. Payroll. Oh, here we go with my disaster. So I am a chronic do-it-yourselfer, and I'm trying to recover from that. And sometimes it's just ignorance, thinking, how could this be so hard? No one ever told me to use a payroll company. So another reason I'm doing the podcast, use a payroll company. I'm telling you, you must. So, I mean, I hired bookkeepers and CPAs, people to do my taxes. I mean, nobody ever told me that I needed to be using a payroll company and that I could pretty easily screw up and not submit the right forms. So like ADP is an example. I mentioned before, TriNet will do your payroll and handle benefits. Our GWA employee, Megan, who's the primary association manager, she is a TriNet employee, and it is dreamy because I can't screw it up. And my last employee in Chicago before I sold that space was also a TriNet employee. And you can see the date, you know, where TriNet popped in and paid all the things that, so I was doing most things right, but there was one piece that I was not sending to the state that I didn't realize I needed to send. And I'm thinking I was paying through QuickBooks. I had payroll set up on QuickBooks, and QuickBooks tells you, you know, all the forms you need to submit and sends you little emails with links, and you click them and you do the thing. Well, they must not have sent these links for the thing that I needed to send to the state, and I didn't do it. And so I mean, in the state, it takes them years to figure these things out. So they just started calling me about something from 2015. you know, and I sold that business, and so I've got all the QuickBooks turned off. I got everything off, and so I have to go back in and turn it on and figure it out, and what was I doing, and what forms did I miss, and how do I, you know, figure out how to fill out the form, and do I now owe penalties, and I don't know yet what the penalties look like. I'm somewhat afraid of that. So that was one of the other inspirations for this podcast, and I posted. So quick reminder, we have a Facebook group for the Everything Coworking podcast listeners. You can get there by going to www.everythingcoworkingclub.com. It'll send you right to the group so you can join. And I posted a picture last week of someone who is not actually me, but looked like me at a table at a desk, you know, with papers stacked up and her head in her hands, and said, you know, this is me today, talking to the state of Illinois, which is always a treat. So please, when you hire someone, don't do it yourself. Get a payroll processor to do it. It will cost you money and it will save you money in the long run, because they won't screw things up for you. So, and I know there are people out there who've had great experiences with payroll companies, and, you know, things certainly can happen with them too, but it's better than doing it on your own and missing things. So please do that. And then in terms of training, so when you think about onboarding a new employee, like I said, if you hire an employee and then you start working on your business and doing other things, so I now wear lots of hats. I own a co-working space. I am the executive director of the Global Workspace Association. I help run the annual conference. I do the podcast. So I'm kind of off and running and doing a lot of things and not always in the day-to-day what's going on in the space. So it's important that we have all the processes all documented and very clear and easy to reference for when we hire someone new. So we have Google Drive and Dropbox documents that outline everything we do, from a tour process to a checklist to what you need to do in the space every day, to how to process mail, the virtual mail clients, you know, when their mail comes in, anything tricky we do. So we have a somewhat complicated end of the month bookkeeping process. I'm sure I'm not alone with that, but that is done in video. And I like to use Loom, which is a Google Chrome extension. It's free and it's great. And you can file the links and have access to those. LastPass, we use that for passwords. So I'm not sitting there all of a sudden saying, ooh, how do I get into our CRM, or how do I get into this or that? It's all in LastPass, and I have access to everything, and my manager has access to everything, and it doesn't matter kind of who sets it up. It's, we both have access to what we need to have access to. So have all of those processes in place. And if you're getting ready to hire your first person, that can be part of your processing as your process, as you're writing the job description and sort of preparing to start interviewing, is start documenting everything that you do. You don't want to have a training process that is only based on shadowing. You want documentation so that you know things are getting done to your standard and that your new employee has something to refer to when you're not sitting next to them. Okay, so that is what I had to share with you today. So I hope this has been helpful. Again, I will link to the resources I mentioned at everythingcoworking.com/70, the sample job descriptions, including ours, the list of places that we post, the links to the other shows that are about hiring, the link to the GWA full research report that has the benchmarking data in it. Anything that I mentioned today, we will put that in the show notes. So thank you for joining me. And again, if you have any questions or want to talk about payroll disasters, pop into the Facebook group at www.everythingcoworkingclub.com. Have a great week, and I will talk to you next week.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.